Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Universal Love Movement podcast, the special series on accessing ability. I'm your host, Dr. Carl S. Moore, and today we're going to be diving deep and deeper into the fascinating world of what I might refer to as like a natural intelligence or a natural ability. And we have really dearest friend, Dorothy Bach, professor and associate director at UVA's Center on Teaching Excellence, and co-director of the Nature Connection Lab, along with Dr. Carolyn, is it Skyler, right? Co-director of
Skyler.
Wonderful, wonderful. And soon to be dear, you are already a dear friend. I just can feel the vibration.
Thank you, Carl.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm excited to be able to chat with you both today. This episode on, we can call it whatever we like, but really, I was inspired. I'm not sure if either of you are familiar with, David Gardner's work on the seven intelligences. He wrote Intelligence Reframed back in 1981. And I read that when I was in grad school in like the, you know, early 2000s. But he actually had another intelligence later that was like the nature smart or something like that. And I was so excited. It became his eighth intelligence. And I know that people do have ability to be really smart, or I guess I would say connected or rich with the nature, but then also there are things and capacities that are allowed by being in nature. But I don't know, that's just me in terms of where I am at right now, but I want to hear about from you. So talk to me about yourselves. Tell me about the Nature Connection Lab and like its mission. We can start off there, and then we can dive into some deeper stuff.
Well, and we're excited to talk to you about the Nature Connection Lab because it's new, it's emerging for us. We have been teaching together for the last year and a half at the University of Virginia, a class called Restoring Our Relationship with Nature. And that class is all about helping students to recognize their own feelings and thoughts about the natural world, as there isn't much time given to that, even in environmental science programs. And yet we know that people that feel emotionally connected and feel a part of nature are healthier, that it's a really important part of leading a quality life to know that you are part of the natural world and that you have the right to seek it out and to know its benefits and to be able to enjoy its benefits and to be engaged in caretaking for the natural world as a form of purpose and meaning, particularly in this time of climate change. And we have found the experience of teaching is very powerful because there's such a basic need for us to recognize our connection to nature. And we live in a world that doesn't recognize that by and large, you know, because of the rupture with the natural world that happened many, many, many generations ago, because of a lot of different forces. And so we have our sense of commitment to taking this work outside the university to a larger audience led us to think about starting a nonprofit called Nature Connection Lab. And its purpose really is to promote human and planetary health through nature connection education and innovation and community collaboration. So we have a variety of projects starting that all share the same common purpose of helping people to know in their bodies and their minds and their hearts that they have a place in the natural world that is both an incredible gift, but also a responsibility. And helping people to go on a journey to figure out what that means for themselves, but also in community, in caring community, since that's such a basic need for us to connect with each other as part of nature. I don't know if you want to add to that, Dorothy.
Yeah, so for me, the journey in these last couple of years with Carolyn has been really benefiting from her work with an organization she founded prior to this one called Wild Rock, which is all about nature play for kids. And this realization that access to nature is not equal, and that we can actually trace all kinds of mental and emotional deficits to our ability to be in close to green spaces. And Carolyn made it her mission to make possible that kids in school schools in our area, Albemarle County and Charlottesville, will spend some time outside working with teachers to understand that courtyards can be transformed into nature connection spaces. And her background as a trauma therapist, and really realizing that this can be key to mental health and community health, really intrigued me, wanting to collaborate with her in the academic setting, where we have the possibility to educate the next generations of leaders around nature, not only as a resource to be exploited, but actually as a deeply, just as a deep need and a deep soul resource, if you wish, mental resource for mental restoration, and just a deep loving connection that helps our communities, that helps the planet. And so I'm super excited to have that opportunity to work with her in an academic setting with students who are out there to do great things in the world.
Well, yeah, and it's beautiful to be able to chat with you both, just to kind of go in reverse. The leadership part, I've been doing some work. I'm actually currently working on a project about humanized leadership, which I would love to specifically talk to you both about. And like, what does it mean, you know, and to humanize yourself? Because it's always about, you know, the others in terms of what one is doing. But how do you do that? And I kind of, even from learning from what you've mentioned thus far about nature, that it could really help. You mentioned the mental health part, right? And mentioned the kids in the space. And I'm so happy. You seem to have it covered on all angles, or from each level. It's like, start with the kids. I mean, we have to start at both places, right? But make sure you're touching the kids and you're touching the young adults or the adults through leadership. So I think that's great. And then Carolyn, you had mentioned earlier the have a place in the world. You mentioned promoting planetary health. You want people to have a place in the natural world, and it's like a gift and a responsibility. And I really do love that you both are leaning into providing people the gift, but then also kind of like at the same time, nudge responsibility, because of, you know, especially with our earth and everything, in terms of doing something about it. So it's like a mutually beneficial thing, I'm sure, that can happen. So there is this connection with leadership, right, that we'll first start with, and nature. What would you say a leader would benefit? And then we'll go into like teaching and learning specifics in terms of the classroom. But if I'm a person that is leading self through the world, first starts with oneself, loving self, trying to promote health with self, what would you say in terms of, not even if it's not work, if it's uncharted territory now for the Nature Connection Lab, but just from both of your personal experiences and expertise, how does nature play a role in one's leadership of self and others, you know, in terms of your experiences?
Well, one of the things I like to think about is, you know, when we're leading a life of intention, I love how you call it self-leadership. I think they're similar concepts. Am I right about that?
That's, yeah, self-leadership. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, when you're intending to bring self-awareness to your choices and to move in directions that you think are not only good for yourself, but to the world in general, there's so many different layers to that and so many different pathways you can go down. But at the core, there's this idea of how you're relating to yourself and how you're relating to other people and how you're relating to the world. And a lot of times in the mental health field, there's a lot of attention about how are you relating to yourself and how are you relating to other people. And it's rarely brought up, well, how are you relating to the world, the natural world and all the living beings that surround you? That's hardly ever brought up. And yet the science is that really matters, that our internal world is intrinsically connected to the external world, that the health of the planet is not separate from our mental health. And that just makes sense. How can you be mentally healthy if you're living in a space where there is degradation of the elements around you that are connected to your being, your ability to drink clean water and breathe clean air and look at, you know, the healthy, thriving ecosystems. So we often forget the equation of ourselves as part of an ecosystem. And so if you want to have self-leadership, one of the areas to be intentional about is, how do I understand myself in connection to this larger world full of life? How do I understand myself as not only a consumer, as someone that goes into nature, but as someone that is nature, that has a birthright to recognize oneself as part of nature? And how do I take that knowledge and magnify my actions so that I can benefit from serving the life around me, and including human and more than human? How can I grow and learn from traditions that have maintained that understanding if I've come from a tradition that's become quite distant from it? How can I experiment with different ways of being in the natural world that are outside my current understanding? Because if we go down that path, we can only grow in our humanity. We can only grow in our ability to contribute to planetary health. And I think if you're contributing to planetary health, you're contributing to human health, because they're one and the same.
Wow, this is as a person who is very interested in nature, and actually it leaves an impression, and it's motivational to, you know, you mentioned not being just a consumer of nature. And I think about me in vacations of like, hey, I want to go to the beach or go to the rainforest or what have you. And that connection, there's so much there. And I'm going to stop reflecting back and allow, because I know Dorothy may have others to add, but there's so many nuggets here that really can create a paradigm shift for folks, right? That I think that you're saying, which I really appreciate. Yeah, Dorothy, did you want to add anything else as it relates to the leadership part for nature?
And then I like the fact that you say paradigm shift. I would like to add, it's also a consciousness shift that comes along with tuning into a larger universe around us. And just speaking very personally about my own experience of waking up literally in the, you know, when I'm outside, very often the focus is so narrowly directed towards the day-to-day, the little, the, you know, the administrative, the, you know, human sphere of our complex modern world. And I do realize when I take a walk, I kind of come to my senses, and it really helps me distinguish the unimportant from the really important. I think our world is so focused on, you know, getting things right. Certainly in the academic world, it's all about defending yourself and being, you know, it's a lot of defensive mechanisms. And this different type of, you know, being, feeling accepted, feeling part of, is not necessarily available to me in the modern world so easily. And it becomes much more of a possibility. And with that, my, you know, my intention shift, I want to do focus on, you know, what's really important to me. And it helps me not lose sight of what is really at the heart of what I intend to create in the world. So that is, you know, for me, for my self-leadership, being able to connect on a regular basis is critical.
I love all this. And maybe just for you, Dorothy, start with you. There's so many questions I want to ask here. So that's a new ability, because the question I was going to ask as a follow-up to both of you with is, now, with this time in nature, the relationship changing, the consciousness changing, the paradigm changing, what are those new abilities that, and they may not be brand new, but more refined, right? And more honed, would you kind of call out that it allows for a person? And there may be some that are more so in the mental health area, or some in the area of, not necessarily about mental health, but just one's ability to actually, not in the sake of being productive and getting things done, but to do, you know, to actually exist in the world in a sense of you being able to do more, I guess, for lack of better words.
Well, the first thing that strikes me when you say that is the skills of nature connection are actually very simple, and they're profound, and they tend to be overlooked. And one of the skills is just the ability to notice. And if you think about it, a lot of our activities rely on the gifts of nature as a backdrop. Like, it's lovely to be playing sports with trees all around you, or taking a walk through a park, or sitting on a back deck and hearing the sounds of a stream. You know, we get passive benefits from just the beauty and the calming effects of nature often in our daily lives, even if we're in urban settings. Because I think a lot of urban settings are working towards trying to bring natural elements into spaces and working to try to make green space more available. But we don't often take the time to intentionally connect with nature around us. So if I were to ask the typical person, what do the plants look like in the local green space closest to you? Disregarding the names, because I'm not concerned necessarily about people knowing scientific names, but what are the things that delight you in that space? What do you find beautiful? What do you find nourishing in that space? Most of us would be hard pressed to answer that, because we aren't really tuning in our senses to those spaces in a way that suggests a relationship, in a way that suggests knowing the earth entities that are there and recognizing them as having intrinsic value. So I think a first step is to opening our senses much wider than they are, and to take the time to recognize that there are life forms around us that are miraculous, awe-inspiring, full of wonder, if we actually take the time to notice. And people that do that, that savor looking at a leaf or touching bark or smelling the soil or listening to water, and doing that through art or meditation or through play or through photography, they begin to get benefits. The science tells us that. People that are rich in this kind of nature connection that we're talking about here, which is highly intentional, it does benefit mental health. And of course you're gonna get benefits just from being outside, but there's a deeper dimension that you can cultivate through this kind of noticing that I'm speaking of.
Well, yeah, noticing is, especially at this day and age, people can definitely benefit from that because of all of the detractors out there. Yeah, I'll definitely, and all those, the other elements that you mentioned, and I'll turn it over to you, Dorothy. Any other added elements in terms of like ways of being, doing, et cetera, that, you know, this consciousness shift, the relationship with nature enhances, like those other abilities.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, one thing, I just really love this conversation and listening to Carolyn speak. So it does, you know, elevating earth entities from the background and bringing them into the foreground, and really understanding that we are, humans are just one form of the multiple wonders and subjectivities that are around us. And that word might sound really odd, but it is really understanding that we are part of a larger ecology to which we belong, on which we depend. There's lots of science that is actually very prosaic about the, you know, what it does to our mind, but I do want to highlight that as well. So in terms of extending our abilities, we do know that nature or being intentionally in nature has restorative benefits for our emotions and for our mental capacity. So, and Carolyn will fill in a moment, because you know, we have read a lot of the research with our class at UVA. So we do, for example, know that nature benefits them being out in nature and being intentionally out in nature helps us with calming down our nervous system. There are all these studies that show if you're stressed and you have a break outside, your nervous system goes into a much calmer state much more quickly. In an urban setting, there are too many external stimuli that are really hard coming at you, and this one is more about relaxing and allowing your attention to just be soft and passive, and soft fascination is a term that researchers use. And being in an environment that provides soft opportunities for soft fascination are restorative. It can pull us out of rumination, and rumination often is a symptom of depression. So it can also pull us away from returning thought patterns that are spiraling and that we are trapped in, and that can consume mental energy, so emotional and mental energy. So these are two mechanisms by which nature really pulls us out and restores some of the energies that the brain needs to be at capacity. I don't know what you want to add to that.
Well, it makes sense that if your brain is moving into rest and digestion phase of the nervous system, rather than a fight or flight, you have access to creativity, and you have access to better problem solving, and you have access to just the wisdom that we all carry within ourselves. So, and that is been proven by research that people, even with short periods of time in nature, are faster at resolving complicated problems, for example. And people are also more pro-social when they're in nature, where it's easier for us to access kindness and our ability to connect with other people when we're in nature, because of the way it supports our nervous system and helps us to be more available to each other.
So, and actually there's also, if I may add onto this, these studies that really benefiting from being outside and having access to the attention restoration properties of nature closes the attention gap. I'm creating this word. So if you, there are studies done with kids with ADHD, and it can close the attention gap fully if you provide restoration periods for kids to be playing, to be allowing their minds to just have a more diffuse and unfocused period of time in the day, so that the mind can does what it can do what it does without demanding an intense focus at all times, which schooling often does.
It's interesting that even for kids without ADHD, like in Finland, for example, they don't have more than 45 minutes of instruction before there's 15 minutes of this restorative time playing and being in outdoor settings. And from the Western perspective, the American perspective, that might sound like, how can kids be learning if every 45 minutes they're out playing? Because we don't value play as a form of learning. We don't value nature connection as a form of helping our mental energies. And yet Finland does better on the tests for academic skills than American schools do. So the evidence is, for all of us, ADHD students in particular, having times for free play in nature, and play is a universal need at all ages, by the way, we just forget that, that is so important that we have that capacity to drop into a freedom of exploration and creativity in natural spaces. It's just an essential part of being human.
Oh, that's such a huge thing to underline. It's such an essential part of being human. All of these abilities and capacities that we have, research is showing a little bit more in the science, et cetera. It's just really underscoring the humanness, the things that should be our birthright. And I'm so thankful to have the space for you both to be mentioning. And with the play part, it's interesting because there's an episode which, you know, hopefully it results in a chapter where it's like task and outcomes. What is it? Context, task, and outcomes. And what's interesting is that we are often tied to the activities. You know, this is what we've always done in the spaces and in the actual constructs where we were focusing on, hey, we want kids or adults or whomever to learn the best and throw everything else out the door. Then if we started from that standpoint, people might be leveraging nature more, movement, all these things. But sometimes it's the goal is to use these traditional methods, which aren't all bad, instead of the goal being about the goal, you know, which is really interesting. So I love all this and hearing what you have mentioned and the creativity and problem solving, those skills that you mentioned earlier, and this way of being in a space, really bring me back to this idea of like, when you're in a classroom teaching students about this, and when people think about students, they think traditional age. It could be students of any, part of their journey in life. Are there ways in which you feel nature has been a vehicle, if you want to drill into that a little bit more, for teaching them any subject, of course, like, or teaching anything? We know about the play, we know about what you had mentioned about being in the space of nature and what it does for the brain. And then when you're teaching about nature, if you wanted just to touch on that as well, in terms of like, how do you even teach people about nature? You don't have to give away your secret sauce, but just wanted to make sure we touched on those two before I asked you our last question to wrap up here.
I think to teach about nature, it's really helping people to drop into their body and notice how it feels to be in nature, to have the sensory experiences that let people find out for themselves how much this matters. And we have found that it doesn't take a lot of time for people to wake up to how much they benefit from being in natural spaces, even for small amounts of time. Some of the most moving experiences is for me in my career have been watching people that come into a green space like Wild Rock, which is set up to be a nature playscape, but even in green spaces on college campuses. And at first there's some anxiety, maybe about bugs or just how hot it is, or, you know, if there's gonna be some kind of a threat like a snake. That's so common now because the media often has negative information about nature and people just don't have a lot of lived experience to know what it actually can feel like. And it's interesting how quickly that can turn because it is a birthright. We are actually wired to be in nature. Through most of evolution, people were living completely in the natural world. And we are too, with lots of barriers now, being inside houses. But I think that people begin to get back to what their nervous system is designed for, which is the rich sensory input of the natural world. We have not evolved really for the sedentary screen-based lifestyles that we have. We're still physiologically designed more for what it feels like to be in a natural setting. So I just love watching, for example, a child that's very tentative, kind of standing on the edges at first, and then an hour later, jumping and splashing in a stream. And that can happen. It gives me a lot of hope that we don't have to be next to a national park. We don't need, of course, that would be ideal if we all had access to those kinds of areas, but we don't need to have the high bar nature experiences that really aren't accessible to everybody in order to have deep nature connection. You can have deep nature connection in a city. You can have deep nature connection if you only have a limited amount of time to connect, because it's more about the noticing and the intentionality and the willingness to take the time.
I love that. And that's a reminder for me. I don't need to fly to the beach to have that connection, because I have lots of nature connection opportunities here. It's really, really great. Yeah, go ahead, Dorothy. I felt a thought bubble.
Yeah, and I love what you're saying. We typically in our Western education system are really married to learning about something, right? You were saying, how do you teach about nature? And I would also, where we challenge this paradigm and say, you know, yes, we are already really good in teaching about nature, in particular now with climate change being so palpable and the need for students to be educated for it. And we work particularly with students in environmental fields, and they learn a lot about nature. They learn about ecology, they learn about plants, they learn about biology and genetics, and, you know, technologies that are now used to help mitigate some of the you know, crisis that we experience. But what we find is that not often do we actually learn from our relationship with nature, and certainly not learn from plant teachers, one could say. What can you learn from just observing the leaves fall at the end of the year? And there's lots of rich metaphorical learning that can happen by just observing what's happening in connection with other earth entities, or seeing your larger role, and then also, you know, feeling your larger role in the fabric of things. So this idea of not only learning about something, but actually learning in and from the natural world is something that we are stressing. And particularly because the learning about often leads our students somewhat hopeless. They know all about things. They know about the problems. And they also, so hopelessness is actually a big challenge for this generation. We know that climate anxiety is the number one worry for young people. And what do we do as educators if we, you know, share the problems with students and we don't really tune into ways that we can be with those problems? And one of those ways is nature connection. I know that Carolyn will have a lot more to say about that, but I'm pausing here.
No, and that's beautiful. And Carolyn, as you do, if you can also blend back in the mental health, because there's a direct connection there. And I appreciate that learning, that's just like, that should be a thing for everybody, everywhere, in every space, learning from versus about, because of this, you know, kind of banking, kind of this world that we've been in. But yeah, that's great, Carolyn.
I so appreciate that you said that, because I think cultures, earth-based cultures, people that are observing so carefully and knowing the history of the generations before that we're observing, so I'm talking about indigenous cultures here, there was such deep knowledge that came from observing how bear behaved, how fox behaved, how different plants grew, that I think it's hard for those of us that didn't grow up in that kind of knowledge base to fully appreciate how much we could be learning from nature. And I recently had a chance to read about a woman that was an activist to save redwood trees. And this was decades ago now. She actually lived in a tree she named Luna for over a year to save it from being chopped down. And you might remember it because it did get a lot of media attention. And she has since written a book. Most of us will never get that connected to a tree. And it's interesting that for her, living in a tree for a year, she felt saved by the tree. She felt the nurturance and the wisdom and the spiritual connection she felt with that tree far and away was more of a gift than what she did by actually, and she did save the tree. And I just think that's an interesting thing for us to consider, because most of us have not committed the time to find out, what could my relationship with nature actually be? What could I actually learn about what it means to be human? Because we haven't immersed ourselves with enough intention, because I want to say time, because I don't think these things necessarily take a huge amount of time. It's going in with the belief that you do have something to learn. You're not centering yourself as a human being that is looking at a subpar life form that you're there to dominate. You're there with humility that this is a life form that does not communicate in the same way you do, but yet it still communicates. It still has lessons and knowledge and worthiness for you to benefit from. And I think children know this without it having to be taught. Children find their spirituality in nature, and adults can reclaim it too. I think it's just the openness to kind of unlearn some of the things we've learned about who we are in relation to nature that's in some ways block us from seeing and knowing what nature is offering all the time. So I would just invite people to consider that there's more ability to access that you talk about so beautifully, Carl, with just a willingness to experiment and to open up to what's possible.
Yeah, this is so exciting. I'm over here glowing because of this is exactly the space that the vibration or the kind of moment that I think really will benefit us right now. That savior mentality of going in and wanting to save nature, and although nature, there is a necessity for us to go in and do better and be better. What we can learn and that shift of consciousness and that paradigm shift, huge. It's going to help us. The mother, the father of the earth, the wind, all of those things can help us just as much as we can help them. And it kind of reminds me about when I was doing work. I used to do work in urban, like my PhD is in urban education, and learning about how people, educators, have learned from their students even more so than the students have learned from them, but only when their minds and hearts were ready for it, you know? So I think that's
love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we should probably also just mention briefly, so we have been sharing some of our techniques or practices with educators. And I just remembered last spring when we were outside with this group of professors, and we were just in the garden like we were with our students. It's part of campus. And you led us through this exercise of people just finding random pieces of, earth entities that had fallen off something, but, we didn't rip any leaves off, but simply found, we don't say objects, but earth entities. And it takes skill to actually see metaphorical meaning, but we all have it. So I just love, do you want to explain ways that your mind is working to help yourself and other people just discover the rich metaphors that are all around us?
Just to give an example of what we mean by that, one of the metaphors that I often think of when I see a seed pod of any kind, whether it's a pine cone, as you know, they hold seeds, or whether it's an acorn that has a little cap. One of the things I often think about is nature is so brilliant at protecting something that's new and offering the support for something new to emerge. And you see it in all kinds of brilliant ways, the seed that's connected to white fluff that goes into the wind and carries it where it needs to go, or the seed that has a hard outer case that allows it to withstand pressures that could jeopardize its chance to grow. So I love that metaphor that nature understands the vulnerability of the new. And sometimes that can be a very helpful message for people that are trying new things, new perspectives, new ideas, new ways of healing, to remember that nature is got your back if you just look around for it. And having been a therapist that has helped people and partnered with them and recovering from trauma, there's so much in nature that speaks to our capacity to heal and to regenerate that is just waiting to be noticed. And folks that want to notice and think, well, I don't know if that's there for me. Well, of course, no one's excluded because we're all part of nature. You will surprise yourself if you take a walk someplace, even in an urban park, and say, I'm going to be open to the possibility that I'll see something in the natural world here that could speak to me directly about my connection to a universe that is promoting healing all the time, healing that I can understand integrate in my own life. And if people go in with that intention, they will see what they need to see. Nature speaks all the time. It's available always. It's continuously giving, even in the dire straits that we're experiencing right now with climate change. There's so much hope just in what nature is, and what we can learn from it. And I hope people will experiment with that capacity, your own higher self that is nature, that can recognize the messages and the meaning. Even if you don't grow up in a culture that has the rich myths and stories and ceremony that was supportive at different times and places, we can come up with our own stories and our own rituals and our own meaning. It might start with, you know, finding a favorite tree that somehow resonates with you and going to it and loving on it and appreciating it and considering that it's not too woo-woo to actually consider it a friend. In fact, you'd be pretty smart to consider it a friend if you understand all it does for you. Of course it's your friend. It's helping you breathe. This does not have to be confined to some far out spiritual. This is the truth of our science and reality. So why not be playful? Why not be imaginative? Why not open to wonder and awe and playfulness and just find out who you could be in that realm?
That's just so beautiful. It's like the gift of all gifts. I'm really fortunate to have this conversation with you too, because, you know, when thinking about accessing abilities and, you know, we get into this practical world of all these, what can I do? How can I produce? And when hearing and learning from you, from whether it be the mental health outcomes there to the just abilities to be more connected to oneself, connected to like the world around you, and how much that could actually help one, you know, to whatever, you know, whatever area they want to focus all of their new healthy, you know, their healthy self in. It seems like the gift of all gifts, right? Like, you know, having this connection in nature. I can't think of anything better now that I'm kind of hearing you both speak, and you just provided really practical ways in which the metaphor and the noticing and talked about the creativity earlier and the problem solving and just all of these. I think it makes a really compelling case that it's interesting that we have to make, but it's like self-evident in a sense. And I didn't know if either of you wanted to provide any other practical ways. You said play, go be. Any other elements as we kind of close out here? It's like, hey, where do I start? I want to go out there, you know, they can, of course, contact you too, the Nature Connection Lab, but they just want to start like right now, or they, you know, some folks, and I call people out on this all the time because I'm in a professional development and educational development, but some folks, they're more motivated by, hey, let me learn this to go teach other people, even though they haven't really tried it on themselves yet. It becomes like, becomes their hook. And I'm like, I'm often with faculty, I'm like, hey, you want to do this yourself first, but it's fine. So I have love for those people. So for those who want to take it and become a person who's teaching others about it, or those individuals who are willing to start with themselves, what would you two say to that?
Well, I think, you know, you start where you're at. And for some people that may be first just considering making their living space more nature connected, bringing some plants in, moving furniture so that you can take advantage of any view that you have more often, introducing nature sounds into your space, because there are tracks of birdsong that you can get online, and there's all kinds of evidence of the benefits of hearing birds, because it is both calming but also helps you to be more alert, for example. So you could start just with your own living space and making it more biophilic, making it more sensory rich for nature. And it's amazing how even just a plant has been associated with less truancy in school, less thickness, kinder behavior. It's just amazing the research about what plants can do in spaces. So you can start there. And then if that is something that you already have, that doesn't seem like, you know, you're already kind of beyond that. Maybe your space is already celebrating the benefits of nature. I think the idea of having a space that you return to over and over again that allows you to begin to develop a sense of deep relationship is important. Having a sense of place that is accessible. So, you know, it may be something in a nearby park. If you have access to a backyard, a space in the backyard that you attend to, that you have sort of a pattern of noticing that builds resilience into your life. So that if you have that, when you're doing things like recycling or turning off your light or avoiding using your car and taking steps for stewardship, you're doing that out of not some abstract fear about climate change, but because you actually have love in your heart for nature and for yourself within nature. And it's a source of joy to do that because you're thinking about your interconnectivity with all of life and the fact that your choices matter, even the smallest ones. I would love for people to be taking action for the planet out of the sense of love, the same way we for our family. It's a joy for me to put a meal on the table for my mother.
Right. I want
to have that same kind of joy for anything I do to minimize my impact on the planet. I think we just need to bring more joy into the relationship, and that's where I hope people will start.
That's beautiful. All accessible, low-hanging fruit. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And then there are, of course, books one can read about it. I mean, there's so many beautiful inspirations out there. I mean, from novels, and you just mentioned The Woman Who Lived in a Tree. And mm-hmm. I think this is Overstory, the book by Richard Powell, portrays this person as well as... actually, Suzanne Simmert, who wrote the book about the mother tree, which is really beautiful, a beautiful science book. And then very practical how-to guides for nature connection. I'm thinking about a relatively old book by John Swanson.
Communing with Nature,
which has a series of step-by-step guides for tuning into sensory experience and metaphor. So there's just, if you're somebody who just wants to know more before or being inspired, there are novels, there are science readings, there are how-to guides. So
there's a lot out there. The book Nature Fix is within the last decade and is a bestseller. Yeah. It's easy to get at the library by Florence Williams. And she is a very gifted science writer who tells stories about the science in a way that feel very accessible and inspiring. So that's a good one as a start mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm. There's
a book by what's her first name, Paul, Extended Mind. So if you want to go into the brain science, there is Extended Mind has many different chapters, but nature is one of them. So there is also some ways to think about mind and the physiology of mind and learning. That is one good book to go to.
Yeah, I think that this does definitely come full circle with that last comment about the mind, and everyone has different access points to thinking about nature. Because I remember we started with the Howard Gardner nine intelligences, and the naturalist intelligence, as they would call it, he called it, was the one's ability to recognize and categorize plants and animals. It's still more of that kind of space. Whereas I've learned from you too in this episode, and a part of the expanded conversation we're having, is like the learning, as you mentioned, from in a way of like being and who one is beyond just the, you know, that kind of other type of intelligence. It's just like a consciousness shift, etc. So I really, really appreciate that. And I think that people could benefit from this, moving beyond that kind of traditional notions of intelligence that may have been a little bit more expansive with Howard Gardner, to this new sense of being, new consciousness, new relationship, which I just think is excellent. And I wanted to close with just providing a space for you too. If there's anything that you wanted to share that you had not, I think this was really, really rich and really, it's going to be helpful for folks in terms of understanding an area that we don't talk about as much, but it's all around us. Any personal stories or, you would say final thoughts you would have in terms of the importance of nature and one's ability to just access greater sense of self?
So I would be remiss in not highlighting how much we actually have learned from indigenous wisdom in that space. And I just would also encourage people to get curious about, you know, writers, about maybe their indigenous neighbors within close to their communities. We have learned a whole lot from their spiritual ceremonies and worldview. Kinship worldview is one really important word, a label that we have forgotten to mention. I mean, all that we talked about is really encouraging a way to relate to the more than human world in a kinship pattern. And what we can, you know, we have so much to gain from understanding ourselves in not only a relationship, but understanding the more than human world as a network of kinship network.
I so appreciate you bringing that up, because, you know, most of us are living, not all of us, on unceded land that belongs to Native people. And you can actually go online. There's a website that will allow you to find out who actually is the rightful owner of the land that you're on, in terms of the indigenous people that have stewarded the land for tens of thousands of years. I don't know it offhand, but you can Google, how do I find out the indigenous people where I live? And you can get that information. I do think it's important for us to know that history and to do what we can to be aware.
Oh, this is beautiful. Really great treats for everyone. I really am so thankful to both of you for coming and joining the show today, because this has been, you know, as a person, I'll share this personal really quickly. I started off with my extended spiritual journey beyond, I was raised, you know, Christian. But when I really started to branch out through earth-based traditions of learning, and it became a great portal or gateway into really understanding, like, myself on a deep, like, soul level, my connection to nature. And you brought it back full circle in terms of even what you had mentioned in this episode, in ways that I didn't even expect it. So I really just appreciate the work that both of you are doing. It's like the most important thing in life for me to actually connect to nature in these types of ways. So this has been like an episode of Accessing Ability, the podcast show, where we're really talking about the ways in which people can unlock their, you know, full potential through thinking about the ways that we think in these new expansive ways. And I'm just so thankful for both of you. And we'll do a final pulse, a word or a thought of how you're feeling right now. We'll do that. Well, actually, we're going to pause for a second, because my son wants to interrupt me right here, and I'm going to clip that off. No, yes, it does mean your name. Here you go. Yeah, and you are 20. Yeah, you are 28 years old. Yeah, there you go.
I'm 18.
Yeah, I know. You're.
Wait, no, go back.
Maybe I have to go downstairs, because I'm finishing my episode, and I'll come down there.
No. Bye.
Okay, I'll come back. You go downstairs, and I'll come back with it. Okay, buddy.
Bye.
Okay, but I'll take it. I'll get it. I'm finishing right at this moment. Okay, and then we're good. Oh, you wanted to start over again?
Yeah.
Okay, and I'll give you a whole different one. You want a different one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can do it.
If you want to do it, you can sit right here, and then we'll let you do it, okay? So give me a second. Let me reset it for you, Kyra, okay? All right, give me 2 minutes, okay? Well, Kyra, if you cry, it'll take longer.
No, it won't. You can't even do it, because you guys don't say that. But it won't, because you guys, I just say that because you're fucking
stupid. Okay, sit down. All right. Okay, so I can easily, like, clip this part out. So I'll start back really over again.
I'm so sorry, little guy. I'm really sorry for you taking too long. Yeah.
Don't give him any attention. He's so I'm going to start really quick again. So thank you two so much. This has been a really excellent way of just kind of really returning to this space. I'll ask that you provide a pause. Kyra, you're too loud and it's going to take longer. Stop.
Stop. You can do it. You can do it.
So yeah, I'm going to mute myself. And if you could provide just a final thought or word, I'd greatly appreciate it.
Well, Carl, I just want to thank you for doing this. I'm just so excited that this podcast and the book that you will be writing is going to be out there. And I'm really, really grateful that you gave us an opportunity to contribute.
I'm also feeling a great sense of gratitude. It's always a blessing to be able to talk about the things that mean so much to your heart and to your mind. And we've had that chance with you. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you both. As I mentioned, this is like core to my existence to be able to talk about, you know, especially this nature. Like I access the creator, the connection to the universe through nature. So thank you again for the work you do and have been doing and will do. And those of you who've been listening, thank you to listening to another episode. This is your host, Dr. Carl S. Moore, this special series on accessing ability. You have great abilities waiting to be unleashed and unlocked. So let's do it. So thank you all, and we will see you next time.